few months ago, in response to too many tragedies, this country took up the cause of protecting more of our people from gun violence. Families that know unspeakable grief summoned the courage to petition their elected leaders. A few minutes ago, a minority in the United States Senate decided it wasn't worth it. They blocked common sense gun reforms even while these families looked on from the Senate gallery. By now, it's well known that 90% of the American people support universal background checks that make it harder for a dangerous person to buy a gun. We're talking about convicted felons, people convicted of domestic violence, people with a severe mental illness. 90% of Americans support that idea. And a few minutes ago, 90% of Democrats in the Senate voted for that idea. But it's not going to happen, because 90% of Republicans in the Senate just voted against that idea. So all in all, this was a pretty shameful day for Washington.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and we just wanted to play that clip of President Barack Obama after the defeat of the bills in the U.S. Senate. We are joined by Mark Fullman, who is senior editor at Mother Jones, former editor at Salon, co-founder of Media Bugs, a service for correcting errors and problems in media coverage, and Alex Bolton, senior staff writer at The Hill newspaper in Washington. And Mark Fullman and Alex Bolton, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Did we just lose Alex? He's coming back? Okay. Mark, so let's begin. I think a lot of people, I mean, we've been writing about it in some of the press, especially in the national press, New York Times and the Washington Post, but not a lot of local media. What really, why it failed? What is it about the Senate that appears its rules to be kind of arcane and dysfunctional? What role did that play in what happened in this vote?
Well, I'm not so sure it was really about the rules. I think it's more the politics on this issue are rather extraordinary in terms of the disconnect between, you know, the politics and the reality of the issue in terms of, you know, the facts of gun violence. I think that, you know, we see that the majority of the American public understands that we've got a real problem with gun violence in the country, both in terms of daily gun violence, more than 30,000 people a year dying, and with mass shootings, which, you know, our reporting work at Mother Jones has showed is on the rise. So you have public opinion overwhelmingly behind this idea for universal background checks, and yet the Congress doesn't pass it. So why is that? Well, I think you have to credit the gun lobby. I mean, they've done a tremendous job of effectively turning the conversation away from the facts and essentially using demagoguery to put political pressure on a lot of members of the Senate.
I mean, one of the things that some people have been writing about in some of the journals is that it's a combination of the power of the gun lobby as well as the kind of rules that and the games that people were trying to play, whether it was Democrats or Republicans, in some ways both, about having to have get to 60 votes as opposed to the 54 that would voted for it, that couldn't do a simple majority. Right. That's what I meant by the complexity of the rules and how those rules were played out.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, that works both ways, right? So in my view, it's more a function of just the partisanship we're seeing in play in Congress in recent years. You know, either side can abuse the filibuster rule when they're in power. And so, you know, I think a lot of people have pointed at Harry Reid and said, you know, he failed to fix that. But what happens the next time the Democrats are in the minority, you know, they are going to want to have that power too. So, you know, that may well have contributed to this situation. But again, I think it's the politics of the issue are particularly extreme when it comes to guns, and I think that you see exploitation of that by the conservative side here. I mean, they basically outright lied about what this bill would do, that it would create a federal gun registry, when in fact it reinforced a law that already exists that there cannot be a federal gun registry. And so you have the president of the United States standing up yesterday and saying outright that the gun lobby is lying. I mean, that's a pretty remarkable thing to see a president do.
No, it is. I mean, I think that politically also President Barack Obama put a lot of weight behind this and a lot of emotional weight behind this. Mm-hmm. This is a real setback for him, his administration, and most of America that has said that we want some kind of background checks. in this country.
Yeah, it's certainly a political blow to the White House, and it's interesting. You know, I think it points to the question of why Obama pursued this as such a centerpiece of his agenda in the first place. And I think, you know, he seemed authentically driven to really try to affect change on a political issue that's historically a loser, and again has proven to be that, at least to this point. I don't think that it's over yet. You know, they're vowing to continue the fight, but obviously it's a very, very difficult political battle to try to get something meaningful through Congress.
Let me open the phones, get some questions for you while you're with us. 410-319-8888. And Jim, you're on the air. Hi, Jim, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How you doing?
Can you turn down your radio, then we can hear you better. You can
I hear just yourself. Turned it off. That way I can hear
gotcha.
You and you can hear me.
Exactly, right. Go ahead.
My thing about this gun control thing, excuse me, I don't mean to make such harsh comments. It's not my intention.
Mm-hmm.
But, excuse me, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I feel that, you know, no noise was made before this Newtown thing. You understand? Now, I do understand families lost loved ones. Yeah, no doubt. I do understand that. But one thing, I would like to say this about President Obama. Obama has done his best since he's been in office. You understand? He has traveled a lot of hard roads since he's been in office. He's been up against the opposition for a long time. And, you know, he shouldn't feel as though that he let the people down just because Congress or the Senate doesn't agree with what he wants to, you know,
right.
pass. You understand? He's done a beautiful job. Him and Bill Clinton, to me, are the best presidents ever.
All right. Well, Jim, I appreciate the call. I'm glad you joined us. And I let's get another caller in here and then come back to our guests to get some comment. 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Leo. You're on the air.
Hello.
Leo, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
Well, it's the same old, Mark Steiner. The rise of the white militia and the extreme right-wing movement, the Tea Party and all that crowd, given the fact we've got a black president who they continue to vilify and a black governor of the state of Massachusetts, has everything to do with why you want to maintain the status quo. White people, by comparison to blacks, have arsenals in their homes, particularly in suburbia in this country. Nothing has changed fundamentally. And until we continue to coalesce and fight the good fight, this problem will continue in our country, not the least of which it's enhanced. Can you hear me?
We can.
Not the least of which it's enhanced by the news media, which Fox News and others continue to exacerbate the problem by telling lies and misrepresenting what the law enforcement officials are doing with respect to gun control and with respect to the explosions that occurred in Boston the other day. So we got to just keep on. We got to stay on the battlefield, Mark. Nothing has changed in the United States, and more importantly, the elected officials in the state of Maryland. Quite frankly, I don't hear them. I don't hear Barbara Mikulski, Elijah Cummings. I don't hear Ben Cardin or Dutch Ruppersberger and the like
right.
doing what they ought to be doing to represent the interests of the people in a vigorous and forceful way.
All right. Yeah, thanks. You know, I was going back to the power of the gun lobby and the gun industry. I think that is part of what you were trying to describe. I think Mark Fulman is that we don't really understand the power of that. I mean, they one senator mentioned from West Virginia said he thought he could get 70 votes, except that the NRA came in and really kind of twisted a number of arms who would be condemned for not being conservative enough. I mean, do you think that was a factor? I mean, what do you think led to this? Because plenty of people argue that, and one of our guests who wasn't here right now, Alex Bolton, argued in a piece that he had in the Hill newspaper that part of it had to do with the fact that the Senate is just a very strange organization in the 21st century, where rural states have can dominate the Senate, even though the majority of people don't live there, and support the legislation.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the no doubt the gun lobby has played a key role in this. You know, there's a lot of focus paid to money, to their lobbying power. But I think, you know, people have also underestimated their ability to organize grassroots and to put pressure on that way, to have gun owners calling up Congress and pressuring them when a vote like this is coming up. And their messaging, too. I mean, they're ruthless and willing to completely ignore facts. I mean, I broke a story in Mother Jones a couple weeks ago about when they put out their school security report, they cited a phony mass school shooting in it to push their agenda. You know, talked about a massacre in Minnesota that didn't exist.
Right.
And, you know, this kind of thing is part and parcel of their strategy, apparently. They are willing to use their messaging to push this in any way that they see as effective or necessary to really just distract the public discussion from the reality of the gun issue. I mean, this is not a debate over pro-gun, anti-gun. I think that's an important thing to keep coming back to. You know, they paint people who are interested in, you know, common sense or reasonable gun reform as anti-gun. No one is trying to take away anyone's guns. The agenda is to regulate guns better, because essentially right now you have a free-for-all. Anybody can get a gun on the internet without a background check. I mean, that's what this was about, right? And something that seems even as sensible as that can't get through, because they turn everything into a referendum on the Second Amendment. And they do it very effectively.
Well, and it's also, you look at this, again, you look at the Senate, this other vote that took place that people aren't talking about is that 57 senators, more than the 54 that would have voted for these measures, 57 senators voted to allow people to carry guns and cross state lines, and you know, which is three more senators than would have voted for the gun control bill itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, again, I think it points to the way in which this issue has been made into a political instrument. You know, that there are quite a few members of Congress who see it as pivotal to their reelection prospects. So anybody who's up again in 2014 is going to think very carefully about which side of this they're going to come down on. And I think when, you know, some people saw this was going to be a very close vote, or it was starting to fade, its chances were starting to fade, then it's easier for them to say, I'm not going to back it up, or I'm going to back up a measure that will be more pleasing to gun owners.
Well, it's, you know, Mark Fulman, just say it's always a pleasure to have you with us. And I, the stuff you write in Mother Jones, I think, is invaluable. We almost called you the other week, but we were so jammed we couldn't, about your story about the fake shooting, which I thought was really an important piece. And senior editor Mother Jones, I appreciate all the work you do, and thank you so much for being with us once again.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
We'll switch gears here a bit. We have with us in the studio, Vinnie DeMarco, president of Maryland's to Prevent Gun Violence, and on the phone, Mike Hammond, who is a legislative counsel for the Gun Owners Association of America, a national gun lobbying organization, nonprofit gun lobbying organization. And Mike and Vinnie, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Hi, Baltimore.
Howdy, 410-319-8888. You're in Virginia, right?
Yes. You're talking to me?
Yes.
Yes, we're at Gun Owners of America in Springfield, Virginia.
So let's look at what just happened. We played a clip of President Obama at the very top here.
Okay.
You had 54 senators saying that we had represented more than 80%, I think, of most polls showing, of Americans who said that they wanted to have stricter gun control. That said that we want background checks. More extensive background checks on people before they can buy guns across the internet or anywhere else, and it failed. So, what do you think that means?
We can test those polls.
First of all, the fact of the matter is that background checks work, and we know they work because in 1993 we passed the National Brady Law requiring background checks at gun stores, and since then, hundreds of thousands, millions of people have been denied guns. Criminals who went into a gun store thinking they could get a gun, but there was a background check done and they were denied a gun. And I think that was very significant, and who knows how many lives have been saved because of that. And unfortunately, the Brady Law, as it passed, only applied to gun stores and not gun shows and other places where many guns are sold. So since then, there have been efforts to close that big loophole. And in fact, the NRA used to support that. And I don't know why they don't anymore, because it fits in with the theory that people who shouldn't get guns shouldn't get guns. People who tend to be violent with guns, former criminals, et cetera, convicts, should not get guns. So it really makes sense to have background checks at gun shows and in commercial sales. And in fact, Mark, it's very important to know that in the 14 states and Washington, D.C. that already require background checks for handgun sales outside of a licensed dealer, gun trafficking is 48% lower. The rate at which women are killed with a gun by an intimate partner is 38% lower. And gun suicide rate is 49% lower, because people who shouldn't get guns don't get guns. In Columbine, the young man who did that shooting got his gun at a gun show and could have been stopped if there was a background check. It makes sense. And that's why 90% of Americans, including 80% of gun owners, support background checks at gun shows and commercial sales. And we think it's going to happen. I just think it's a matter of time.
Mike, go ahead.
First of all, the anti-gun forces talk about stopping people from purchasing guns, at least for the time being. They don't indicate whether those people ultimately get guns from other sources and illegal sources. And if you look at those 14 states in which the background checks currently apply to all transactions, in addition to transactions from federal firearms licensees, those jurisdictions are rivers of blood. You're saying that Washington, D.C. is supposed to be the paradigm for Vermont, New Hampshire, North Dakota, South Dakota? If you think that New Hampshire wants to be a Washington, D.C. and wants the gun policies of Washington, D.C., you're quite wrong. Secondly, the background checks wouldn't have stopped Adam Lanza because he stole his guns. Wouldn't have stopped the Virginia Tech killer, wouldn't have stopped James Holmes, and wouldn't have stopped Jared Lochner, because guess what? They passed background checks before they purchased firearms. And so the bottom line is that background checks don't work. We all understand what this is about. Jared Nadler, the congressman from New York, said we need to, quote, exploit, close quote, Newtown in order to create a political objective. We all understand that what this is about is not creating policy that would stop Newtown, but rather creating politics that will remove what is perceived as the major pillar of the Republican Party.
The fact of the matter is, background checks work. We know from the Brady Law, the experience of the Brady Law, that criminals who shouldn't get guns went into gun stores after the Brady Law was enacted and were denied guns because of that law. Otherwise, they would have gotten the gun, and who knows what they would have done with it. I think it is really sad that the NRA used to support reasonable measures like background checks everywhere, and now they don't. They've made a political decision of some kind, which I don't know what it is. But the vast majority of Americans know it makes perfect sense to implement laws that deny guns to people who shouldn't have them. In the Columbine shooting, that gun was bought at a gun show because there wasn't a background check. If there had been a background check, that gun would have been denied. And I want to emphasize something here. We want laws that make sense, that save lives, like the Brady Law. So we should just extend the Brady Law to commercial sales and gun shows where it doesn't make any sense to not do this. People have gone into gun shows, Mark, and bought guns without anybody asking anything about them. Does that make any sense? Absolutely not.
What would it have meant to both of you? Let me open the phones here.
Can I answer that? Can I respond to that? Once again, your anti-gun guest has talked about, at least for the time being, a purchase being stopped, but he hasn't talked about whether or not that individual went on to get a gun from another source. And 95% of the criminals in this country get guns on the black market. Secondly, on Columbine, the purchaser did go into a gun show. It's a woman who purchased it for Harrison Klebold. But she was would have passed a background check. She was legally entitled to buy a firearm, although her passing it to someone who couldn't illegally or couldn't legally own a gun was illegal, but that wouldn't have been caught by a background check. So Columbine is another case of a mass shooting in which a background check would have done absolutely no good whatsoever.
Well, I guess the question I have, though, for both of you very quickly, I do want to get to the phones here. People are calling. I want to get to their calls. And Eugene and Roscoe, we're going to come to your calls right here. But the question is, I guess, what if we had background checks for anybody who wanted to purchase a gun, whether it's I wanted to buy a gun from you, Mike, or if I wanted to buy a gun at a gun show or a gun store or whatever that happened to be, but we had to go through a background check before that happened, what would that do? Why would that diminish our rights from your perspective?
I'm not saying. I assume that's a question to me, right?
Both, yeah.
First of all, it would diminish our rights because 8% of the people who currently go through Brady checks get false negatives. That is, they get what's called a yellow light. They're not told they can go ahead. They're not told they can are blocked. After 3 days, they can theoretically buy a gun. But most gun dealers won't sell them a gun if they have a yellow pending at the end of 3 days. And so as a result, 8% of the population, mostly people whose names are similar to other people, can't buy guns at all. Secondly, the background check breaks down periodically on gun show weekends. On Black Friday, it broke down, thereby shutting down those gun shows and thereby shutting down the ability of individuals to purchase firearms for an entire day.
Well, I'm wondering if Mike wants to repeal the Brady law.
If you're in a rural area, and basically you want to transfer a firearm to your neighbor, guess what? Have to drive 100 miles into Fargo, have to submit yourself to a background check at a dealer, have to hope above hope that you're not one of those 8% that get a false negative. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to transfer a firearm.
Well, I'm wondering if Mike wants to repeal the Brady Law, which has worked so effectively to keep guns out of the hands of criminals. And also, he's got to understand the bill before Congress now would not affect the kind of sale he's talking about. It applies to commercial sales and gun shows that the public strongly supports with good reason. This is a life-saving measure.
No, it doesn't. Let me quote it. It applies to a, quote, advertisement, posting, display, or other listing on the Internet or in a publication by a transferor.
A commercial sale.
Isn't defined, but what it means for purposes of some law, libel and slander law, is that you communicate that desire to transfer to a single other person. It's much broader than it purports to be, and I think it's intentionally deceptive.
And I think that's probably, just trying to be objective, I think that's probably a kind of a misreading of the law.
I think so.
I mean, I'm reading the law verbatim.
No, I know what you're reading.
How can you say that I'm misreading it? I'm giving you
I'm saying that you're misinterpreting it, not misreading it.
Well, you know, states like Maryland have universal background checks, and it's working, and we need to do that everywhere.
Yeah, so how many murders does Baltimore have every year? I'm from New Hampshire. New Hampshire is virtually as safe as any European country. It has very few gun restrictions. You're saying Maryland law works, and yet your city is a river of blood.
I'm saying that the background checks and other laws of Maryland have reduced gun violence, but we just did more in Maryland. We did something in Maryland that other states should do, which is our fingerprint background check. And that kind of measure will stop the kind of secondary sales which often result in guns.
Excuse me, Mike. I want to bring on for a moment before we go to our callers, Alex Bolton, who's going to be in the earlier segment. There's a question we want to ask him while he's here. Alex is staff writer for the Hill newspaper. Alex, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So very quickly, before we go to break, I wanted to the question I was going to ask you earlier, and we can all chime in on this if you like, is the one of the things I posited when I really guess is that in some ways, besides the strength of kind of the NRA, it was the arcane rules of the Senate that in many ways allowed this bill not to pass.
That's true, but I mean the alternative is getting rid of the filibuster, and
right.
something that's been thought about, contemplated, weighed, and rejected because it's just too dangerous in the minds of many Democrats who support the expanded background checks. They feel that this that perhaps the 60 vote threshold is what's keeping Social Security and Medicare from being subjected to some major reforms and cuts.
But it seems like in some ways it also makes everything really dysfunctional in the U.S. Senate, just in that in terms of, you know, the balance of the Senate kind of is skewed in terms of population and where the population in America is and kind of lends itself to kind of these being stymied to get anything through.
Well, the Democrats thought about this very seriously at the beginning of the year. But even the proposal they had on the table, the talking filibuster, would have been pretty significant if you actually require people to go on the floor and debate and hold the floor to block something. It makes it a lot tougher to gum up the works. But in the end, the senior Democrats, guys who'd been in this chamber for a long, long time, they know what it's like to be in the minority. And while it would speed the agenda to some extent in the Senate, you still won't be able to get stuff through the House. This is from the Democrats' perspective. Even if they got this thing passed through the Senate yesterday, it wouldn't have passed the House, most likely. And so what they're really looking ahead to is, you know, the possibility of a Republican regime where Republicans control both chambers and the White House, and the number one target is going to be the president's health care initiative and also Dodd-Frank, Wall Street reform. Those are the things that are going to be on the target list, so that's why they are just not interested in making it easier to pass legislation through the Senate, especially when they don't control the House.
We're going to take a very brief break and come back, and we'll go right to Eugene's call and Roscoe's call. Stay with us as we look at gun control in the U.S. Senate with our guests. Stay with us.
The Center for Remarkable Women is having its first spring gala on Saturday, April 27th at the hotel at Arundel Preserve at 6 p.m. This will be an evening of fellowship, dancing, and fine dining, celebrating our theme, Harlem Nights. Come dressed in your 1930s finest. This event will benefit all of the programs at the Outreach Center. For more information, 410-903-9302. Support for WEAA is provided by the Northwood Appold Community Academy Public Charter Schools 1 and 2 are accepting applications for the 2013-2014 school year for kindergarten to 10th grade. With the nationwide expansion of Freedom and Democracy Schools, NACA aims to offer Baltimore City students a rigorous public school education. NACA 1 and NACA 2 are for you. Application info is available at nacacad.org or 410-323-6712. Baltimore Office of Promotion and the Arts presenting School 33 Arts Center's 21st annual fundraiser, Lotta Arts, Saturday, April 20th at Silo Point from 5:30 until 8 p.m. Guests can view juried art by more than 130 local artists while enjoying hors d'oeuvres, wine, and beer. Tickets and information available at school33.org or 443-263-4350. And members like you. Thank you. Howard University Alumni Club of Baltimore would like to announce their Day at the Races, April 27th at noon, located in the exclusive Jockey Club Pimlico Racetrack. Day at the Races fund the Mamie Carroll Woodford Endowed Scholarship, which provides financial assistance to undergraduate students. Attendees will have the opportunity to enjoy a buffet lunch, touring the facility, and more. Ticket sales end April 20th. For more information, 410-914-8222.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We have with us here in studio Vinnie DeMarco, who is president of the Marylanders to Prevent Gun Violence. Mike Hammond on the phone. He's a legislative counsel for Gun Owners of America. Alex is gone? Still there? He's gone. Okay, and so Alex is not there. But let's go right to the phones at 410-319-8888. Eugene, you're on the air. Hi, Eugene, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. How is everybody?
Great, Eugene.
Welcome.
Listen, I just had a couple comments. First of which, in my humble opinion, it just seems like, you know, as far as this legislation, that it seems as if it's reactionary, as you know, as opposed to being proactive. You know, just in terms of, you know, how to deal with this issue. Probably the second thing I would think that, you know, obviously to expand the background checks. But I think on a state and local government thrust, I think they would probably be able to specifically target what might be more effective per state, though. I mean, you know what I mean? Chicago would be a lot different than someplace like Wyoming. I'm just trying to get some thoughts, maybe. I'll take an answer.
No, that's an interesting thought. Vinny, go ahead.
Well, you know, in Maryland, we passed a great new law that will require handgun purchasers to get a fingerprint-based background check license before they can purchase a gun. And states that have that show that it works and have reduced gun violence. And just yesterday, the gun lobby announced that they're not going to take this law to referendum because they know the people of Maryland would overwhelmingly affirm it. And I think what we're going to see when this law takes effect on October 1 is reduced gun deaths in Maryland, because it will be a lot harder for people to buy a gun and give it to a criminal in our state. And that kind of straw purchase is going to be reduced dramatically, and we're going to save lives.
Well, the question of straw purchase, well, let me get another call in here, then I'm going to come back. I have a question about straw purchase.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I had a couple things. First of all, I think your caller is right. I think that the situation in Wyoming and New Hampshire is considerably different than the situation in Maryland. Secondly, the reason we didn't challenge in a referendum is, as with your handgun permit laws, we're going to challenge it in court and get overturned by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Well, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the handgun permit law, and I think that it's up to the Supreme Court. They will affirm our fingerprint licensing law also.
I doubt it.
Well, it is fully constitutional, and it respects Second Amendment rights at the same time that it saves lives, the kind
of
law every state should do.
You were one of those people who thought that the Second Amendment applied only to the militia until the Supreme Court decided it.
I fully support the Supreme Court's decision. I think the Supreme Court decision is a good decision because it makes clear we can't ban handguns, which is fine with me. I never wanted to ban handguns. What we always wanted was reasonable laws like fingerprint licensing, and now gun owners need not fear laws like fingerprint licensing, because the Supreme Court says it can't be turned into a gun ban, and that's, I think, good. I think that's good for progress.
A couple of responses to that. First of all, the day that Connecticut banned virtually all guns and set up a registration system, the advocates of groups, not yours, but groups like yours, were on television immediately saying, oh, incidentally, these things will do no good. Now we have to go after handguns, which are responsible for about 97% of the homicide firearms deaths in America. So if you say you don't want to go after handguns, my question to you is, why do you want to go after a category of firearm which constitutes only 2.5% of the firearms deaths?
Well, the main part of this law that we passed in Maryland deals with handguns through the fingerprint licensing of handgun purchasers. That's what the key part of this law is. We also banned magazines that could shoot more than 10 bullets and guns that are only meant for military use and assault weapon type guns. But the key part of this law, which will be upheld in court and which the voters of Maryland would have upheld if it was taken a referendum, is fingerprint licensing of handgun purchasers that will save lives.
Let me go. I need to go to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Roscoe, you're on the air. Roscoe, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Good evening. How you doing?
Very well. Welcome.
Listen, Mark, I need some explanation, clarification from your guest that's promoting this gun registration and fingerprinting. My question is, are you of the belief that you said that's going to bring down this ridiculous and gratuitous crime and murders in the city of Baltimore and Chicago and Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
I mean, my focus is not Sandy Hook and Columbine. Not that I'm saying I don't care about that, but I'm saying, what's going to impact me, you know, in this area as the kind of crime that occurs here in Baltimore and Washington, D.C. and Chicago? And you think that this registration and fingerprinting and all that is going to bring down those kind of crimes?
Yes, sir, because states like New Jersey and New York that have had that for many years have lower gun deaths than states like Maryland that don't, and the guns that kill people in those states overwhelmingly come from out of state. So if the whole country had fingerprint licensing, we'd have much lower gun deaths, again, in New York and New Jersey also. Maryland is going to make progress like those states.
New York had 769 gun homicides last year, in which we have records. That's 2011. And many of the states which have very few gun restrictions at all have only a handful of deaths. So
a lot smaller states.
769 homicides is something to be emulated, then I think you have something wrong.
The gun death rates in states like Louisiana that don't have any controls and have similar kind of populations are much higher than New York and New Jersey that have fingerprint handgun licensing, because those laws work to reduce the kind of straw purchases which you described earlier result in a lot of gun deaths.
That's
we can
true.
Do something.
And Louisiana's problem is New Orleans, which had gun seizures, which were so severe that I had to go to the United States Congress and draft legislation to keep New Orleans from taking guns away. So you always compare things to Louisiana, but the
or Mississippi
Louisiana
or Alabama,
New Orleans, and it's gun grabbing.
These states have high gun death rates because they don't restrict access to guns by criminals. States that restrict access to guns by criminals do much better in reducing gun deaths, and that's why we need a national universal background check.
If you think North Dakota is more dangerous than New York State, then you're just delusional.
I'm talking about similar states that have similar kind of populations have better, lower gun death rates if they have fingerprint licensing
and
of handgun purchases.
So 769 deaths a year in Maryland, is that right?
So that's what they have
in New York.
Talking about proportional. Talking about gun death rates are lower in New York than in than Maryland.
But
substantially.
Also in places
lower than New Hampshire than either of them.
Okay, let's stop. Also in states where there are looser gun laws, like New Hampshire, like North Dakota, and other states similar, like I could name, and other studies, have the highest suicide rates by gun. It may not be the intense poverty that causes the kind of violence we've been talking about in other communities, but that guns are involved in suicides at alarming rates in New Hampshire, and New Hampshire's trying to get their hands around it and haven't figured out how to do it.
And states with universal background checks have 49% lower suicide rates with guns. These laws work to reduce gun deaths. We need to enact them.
I don't agree with those statistics, but if you're in San Francisco, of course, you can jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. We don't have a Golden Gate Bridge to jump off of.
Much less likely to be a way of people dying. Much less likely.
That's just not true.
It is true. Guns are the most the easiest way to people kill themselves, the most frequent. And when you have laws like background checks, you reduce people using guns for suicide dramatically.
There are 506 homicides in Chicago last year, 331 in Pennsylvania, 769 in New York, 3,000 in California. If you want to look at the states that have the most gun regulation, those are them.
Pennsylvania has very low very little gun regulation, and we're talking about gun death rates. The states that have fingerprint licensing handgun purchasers have lower gun death rates than similar states with similar populations because those laws reduce straw purchases, and Maryland is about to save lives with Martin O'Malley's new law.
Well, you can define similar any way you want.
We have to take a break here, but let me also just reconfirm something.
I live in Baltimore. It's just fine. Isn't that right, Mark?
I do too. The 2012.
How many deaths did it have last year?
The murders in New York were not 700. I want you to look it up to make sure.
769.
No, excuse me,
homicides.
But they were 414 in 2012, 515 in 2011. It wasn't 700.
And a death rate that's much lower than states like Maryland because they have fingerprint licensing. Thank you, Mark.
But I do appreciate you both being here. We got to take a break. We're going to cut for a minute, and come right back and discuss how the media has been covering the Boston Marathon with two guests, Vinnie DeMarco and Mike Hammett. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much.
Hope it's better than the coverage of this.